This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It was 1,600 migrants who were moved on by police first thing on Tuesday. They've now been moved to schools and gymnasiums in the Paris region. Among those 1,600 migrants who were moved on, there were 22 unaccompanied minors and 29 women.
That's reporter Catherine Field. We'll have the full story coming up. Also, a university researcher jailed last month in Uganda for allegedly insulting President Yoweri Museveni on Facebook has been granted bail. South Sudan's ex-army chief says he has no plans to retaliate after being sacked last night. And the Gambia's governor of the central bank and three other high officials have been dismissed. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, a university researcher jailed last month in Uganda for allegedly insulting President Yoweri Museveni on Facebook has been granted bail. Halima Atumani reports for VOA from the courthouse in Kampala.
Stella Nyanzi entered the packed courtroom Wednesday looking frail. The typically outspoken activist had to be supported by three female wardens. Nyanzi collapsed during the break before Magistrate James Eremie read his ruling.
Exercising my discretion, I proceeded to allow the accused her bail, but on the following conditions. One, the accused shall execute a bond, 10 million shillings, not cash.
Nyanzi's bail comes after 4 weeks behind bars. Nyanzi was arrested and charged with cyber harassment and offensive communication over a Facebook post in which she allegedly called President Yoweri Museveni a pair of buttocks. The post was part of an online campaign Nyanzi had launched calling on the president to live up to his campaign promise to provide free sanitary pads to poor girls. Human rights lawyer Nicholas Opio represented Nyanzi before the court. He said she suffers from hypertension and has had a bout of malaria.
We are happy that the court has finally released Stella on bail. We pray that the authorities do respect the orders of the court and not seek to rearrest Dr. Stella. And I think that now that she's out, we will then have a proper discussion on how to respond to the case before the court.
Before the magistrate ruling, the state attorney, Jonathan Mwaganya, made his conditions for Nyanzi's bail application clear.
Right now, she's alleged to be sick. But, Your Worship, should you find that release of the applicant on bail is tenable at this stage, she should be required to refrain during the subsistence of this case from making any adverse cyber attacks or any derogatory statements against the person of the victim in count or his close members of his household.
In a statement Wednesday, Amnesty International called the charges against Nyanzi ludicrous and an affront to freedom of expression. Amnesty said the charges should be dropped immediately. Nyanzi is expected to return to court May 25th. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
South Sudan's ex-army chief says he has no plans to retaliate after being sacked last night and has rejected accusations that he directed ethnic-related attacks. The Associated Press spoke with Paul Malong, who says he wants to return to his farm and live a simple life. The United States led a failed effort last year to impose sanctions on Malong, accusing him of violating the 2015 peace agreement. Malong has been replaced by General James Ajango Mawut. In the Gambia, the governor of the central bank and three other high officials have been dismissed. The government gave no reason for firing Amadou Kali, two deputies, and the bank's director of finances. However, President Adama Barrow has accused many long-serving leaders of the former government of strongman Yahya Jammeh of corruption. Pandarian Bai is the publisher and managing editor of Freedom Newspaper based in Raleigh, North Carolina. VOA's William Eagle asked him about the latest news from the country.
The governor of the Central Bank of the Gambia, Mr. Amadou Kali, and three other top officials of the bank have been dismissed with immediate effect. Mr. Kali was quoted as saying that he received a letter stating that he has been dismissed with immediate effect. No reason was given for his dismissal, but finance ministry officials, they are saying that the dismissals had to do with the corruption web uncovered when Jammeh was running the country. The former president, Yahya Jammeh, has been accused of defrauding the Gambia in the amount of millions and millions of dollars. Principally, the Gambia telecommunication company, Gamtel. Mr. Jammeh has been accused of using the Gamtel gateway as a family enterprise. An account was opened at the central bank, and Jammeh usually sent his aides to withdraw money from the said account. Basically, it had to do with corruption. And the governor at the time, he was in charge of the bank, and he allowed Mr. Jammeh and his aides to swindle millions and millions of dollars from the Central Bank of the Gambia. These are the allegations, Bill.
I understand in other Gambian news that the new government had hoped to name a vice president, a woman. However, it's unlikely that she will be approved. Tell us about that.
Yes, the president, Mr. Barrow, earlier on appointed Fatoumata Tambajang Diallo as his vice president. But legally, the constitution doesn't allow someone who is more than the age of 65 years of age to become a vice president in the Gambia. So Mrs. Tambajang's appointment was rescinded. It was canceled. And a few days later, Mr. Barrow appointed her as minister in charge of women's affairs, overseeing the office of the vice president. Initially, the government made attempts to repeal that portion of the law, saying that if you are more than 65 years of age, you cannot become a vice president or president of the Gambia. But the approach taken by the Minister of Interior, Mr. Maifati, to make the repeal was not inconsistent with the Constitution of the Gambia. As such, the bill was somehow withdrawn. It is expected that in coming days, the government might go back to Parliament to repeal the law.
I understand that the government is proposing a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to look into human rights abuses over the past 22 or so years of rule under the former president. Tell me about that.
Presently, efforts are being made to constitute the National Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Just this past week, people from the police, from civil society, the media, religious groups, victims of Jammeh's 22 years rule, traveled to Sierra Leone to embark on a case study to see how the Sierra Leoneans were able to reconcile their own country. The minister in charge of justice in the Gambia, Mr. Tambedu, told me in an interview that the goal is to reconcile Gambians. So as such, they have embarked on what they call a study tour. There is also something very controversial coming up as we speak, Bill. The former press officer for President Yahya Jammeh, Fatou Camara, who is in exile here in the U.S., has been designated as the person in charge of media communications. Now, in some quarters, some people are saying that Madam Camara was a victim of Mr. Jammeh's rule, and as such, she might not be impartial in running that office. Now, on the other hand, Mrs. Camara told me in an interview that she's qualified for the job and she has no doubt in her mind that she will deliver the goods. She's yet to be officially appointed, but based on the information we received, she's going to be the media representative to oversee the Reconciliation Commission.
That was Pandarian Bai, publisher and managing editor of Freedom Newspaper. He was speaking with VOA's William Eagle. Kenya's government says it is reaching out to U.S. officials so it can address concerns of corruption and weak accounting procedures, the U.S. embassy says, have prompted the suspension of $21 million in assistance to Kenya's Ministry of Health. Royal Ambor reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Kenya's government spokesperson Eric Riaithe sought to reassure the nation in an interview with VOA Swahili service.
Ya wananchi wa Kenya ni kwamba hakuna huduma ambayo itaathirika. Tutaangalia pia
He says there are no health services that are going to be affected. We look into our budget and where there are any gaps that have arisen as a result of the US government's move, we will be able to fill in. He told VOA his government is reaching out to the United States via diplomatic channels to learn the conditions to be met so the suspension can be lifted. Announcing the suspension Tuesday, the U.S. Embassy said funding for life-saving and essential health services and medications going directly to Kenyans is not affected. The U.S. government contributes more than $650 million annually to Kenya's health sector. The embassy said a small portion of that aid is suspended, $21 million of direct assistance to the Ministry of Health. Citing corruption concerns, the embassy said, "We are working with the ministry on ways to improve accounting and internal controls." There have been several accusations of irregularities at the health ministry during the past year. The most prominent is the 5 billion Afya House scandal. In October, a government audit revealed the health ministry, which is housed at Afya House, could not account for about $51 million or 5.3 billion Kenya shillings in missing funds. The money was suspected to have been paid to supply companies, some of whom were linked to top government officials. Investigations are ongoing. The health sector has seen other upheavals as well. Public doctors demanding promised wage increases, equipment and better working conditions went on strike nationwide for more than 3 months. A leader of that strike, Dr. Ouma Olunga, called the U.S. suspension an important wake-up call.
If we were to rid our system of corruption and then get aid, I think we'll move much faster because, as I mentioned, we have accountability issues in the first place. So how do you help someone who is stealing from themselves?
The opposition has seized on corruption as a top issue before nationwide elections in August. Kenya dropped 6 places in the past year to position 145 out of 176 countries in the annual Corruption Perception Index released by the global watchdog Transparency International. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 18 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. A university researcher jailed last month in Uganda for allegedly insulting President Yoweri Museveni on Facebook has been granted bail. South Sudan's ex-army chief says he has no plans to retaliate after being sacked last night and has rejected accusations that he directed ethnic-related attacks. The Gambia's governor of the central bank and 3 other high officials have been dismissed. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Well, a new study says ethical businesses can flourish in countries with serious corruption problems, but it takes time to earn the support of the public and investors. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Focusing on India, Egypt, and Zimbabwe, the study found the public and investors will support companies taking a stand against unethical behavior. University of Exeter Associate Professor of Management Studies William Harvey took part in the research, along with colleagues in China and the U.S.
Ethical leadership and the importance of ethical reputation is just something that so many global organizations are grappling with because they're operating environments that they're just not used to. And I think there's become this sort of tacit underlying understanding that corruption is the only way to operate in these types of environments.
Some business owners feel they're at a disadvantage if, for example, they don't pay bribes.
So that's the sort of surface level type of answer that sometimes you hear about. But ironically, as we started to sort of scratch beneath the surface, even though many people bemoan the fact that they would have to engage with practices that they didn't believe in, what we found was that there was a real underlying dissatisfaction and unhappiness amongst those people, and also many other types of people who actually were actively willing to resist that kind of corruption.
Harvey says ethical companies must take a long-term view because they may initially lose out to firms engaging in corrupt practices.
I think, and this is the most salient point, in the long term, what's happened is that that has built a lot of respect and a strong ethical reputation amongst a much broader group of people, amongst government, amongst customers, amongst investors. And so, yes, there are costs in the short term in terms of financial operation, in terms of potentially your reputation. But doing the good thing, doing the right thing, pays off in the long term.
The study found implementing ethical business practices can be difficult in emerging economies, such as China, Brazil, South Africa, and Nigeria.
This is very challenging, of course, because the regulatory environment in emerging economies is quite different, and therefore, if you've got less regulation, less advanced rules of law, then clearly one has to assume that there are going to be higher levels of corruption. And so I think that is a major challenge if you're an investor from an environment which has more advanced laws and regulation.
The University of Exeter professor says operating ethically in a corrupt environment is an opportunity to build a unique business reputation.
In order to build an ethical, positive reputation over time, it does take patience, but it also takes consistency in terms of the message. But it's more than marketing. It's also about people wanting to see actions and behavior.
Harvey says a company must have a good ethical reputation across a broad spectrum of people, not just family and friends. And that reputation must match reality.
If there is any dissonance between what you are claiming about your organization and how people are perceiving it, then often there's going to be a lot of negative scrutiny.
For businesses to operate ethically, the study says they need the support of the media, an independent judiciary, and public, civic, religious, and trade organizations. The findings appear in the Harvard Business Review and the Journal of Management Studies. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Italian police have arrested 15 people in a suspected Somali-run human trafficking ring with possible ties to Islamic State terrorists. The Associated Press says the arrests were made last night during raids in Bari in southern Italy. Police say the leader of the ring is suspected of helping two Islamic State fighters enter Italy via Malta. They also say the suspects frequently visited websites linked to al-Shabaab militants in Somalia and used a money transfer network linked to international terrorism. A local official in the town of Bari was also arrested on charges of giving the Somalis fake residences in exchange for money. In France, police once again closed down a growing migrant and refugee camp in northern Paris. Authorities had just cleared the camp 2 months ago because they said it was unsafe and unsanitary. Reporter Catherine Field is following the situation in the French capital. She says once migrants reach Paris, they hope they can cross the channel to reach Britain. She spoke with me about the continued influx of people and her experience working in one of the soup kitchens that provides thousands of meals per day to migrants.
This is a migrant camp in the northern area of Paris that's been gradually attracting more and more migrants, particularly those from Afghanistan and from Sudan. It was 1,600 migrants who were moved on by police first thing on Tuesday. They've now been moved to schools and gymnasiums in the Paris region. Among those 1,600 migrants who were moved on, there were 22 unaccompanied minors and 29 women. Now, the fact was that the police cleared this camp just 2 months earlier, but these migrants keep coming, they keep looking for somewhere to stay, and this is where they find shelter. Really, when you look at this movement of people, some of it seems to have been caused by the closure of two of the camps in the north of France, particularly Calais, what became known as the jungle, that closed last year. And also in April, the Dunkirk camp, that was destroyed by fire, and this has left a lot of migrants just wandering around, not knowing where to go. When you look at it on a bigger picture, you really do get to see quite how many of these migrants are coming to Paris. Since mid-2015, which was, what, just less than 2 years ago, you've had almost 60,000 migrants come to Paris. They've been either rehoused or given shelter temporarily. And the city of Paris really has been struggling to cope with these migrants here because they do tend to come to Paris on their way to the Channel ports in the hope that they can get a boat across the Channel to the United Kingdom.
Also, the camp that was closed, what was the reasoning for closing down that migrant camp?
The authorities just felt that it was no longer sanitary. It wasn't good to have all these migrants. Essentially, they were living on pavements and in parks, and the weather's got a bit nicer here in Paris now, and the authorities thought that it was time to move them on. Having 1,600 young men, migrants, just waiting, sitting, doing nothing in Paris suburbs, it just is not good either for sanitary reasons or just for the good of the neighborhood. That having been said, I was in that neighborhood just after the clearance happened, and there was such a feeling of pity for these guys because they'd been there. Locals were coming down, they were giving them food, they were trying to help them with any sort of health issues they had. So on the one hand, yes, the police were saying this can't go on, but the locals were saying, well, don't just move them somewhere for the sake of moving them. For example, I spoke to a young Ethiopian man, 27 years old. He said that he'd been moved on about 6 weeks ago, and he'd been moved to an area about 150 kilometers from Paris. It was just a hostel. There were eight men to a room, and they didn't provide food. So he said he had no choice but to come back to Paris. At least in Paris, he said, he knew there'd be soup kitchens. He knew that there would be locals who would help them in some way.
And also, there's one soup kitchen that you have been able to really work at. And can you tell us about that and how they're coping with the situation? And I understand they're also getting some food assistance.
Yeah, the food assistance from the Paris mayor has been extensive. One of the reasons that you do have so many soup kitchens in that area is this is traditionally an area that is quite poor in Paris. And you've seen, really, as the waves of migrants have come, just what a strain it's done to the services there. Just as an example, last week, soup kitchens were serving, on average, 450, 500 meals an evening. So you multiply that by five, you figure how many meals they're dishing out. And that means that you've got that many young men, principally, who just do not know where they're going. They're nervous, they feel as though they're threatened. You do get a lot of rivalry, and you get a lot of fights. And that is one of the reasons the police say they've got to keep going in and clearing this out, because you do get the fights that break out between these young men who literally are desperate, and all they have is a backpack with their clothes. It's all they have in the world.
That was reporter Catherine Fields in Paris. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am your host Shaka Sali. Every Wednesday night, Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the future of sub-Saharan Africa's development lies in the hands of its youth. In her new book, Ambassador Robin Renee Sanders says growth and progress is being driven by small and medium-sized enterprises. That's on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at UpfrontAfrica.